News, laws, and regulations are changing by the day. We get it. And at ADP, we're here to help guide you with up-to-the-minute compliance expertise so you can pay your people accurately and on time, regardless of what each new day may bring. Learn more at ADP.com.
This is your tech news briefing for Monday, October 12th. I'm Amanda Llewellyn for The Wall Street Journal. Social media companies have been taking steps to eliminate misinformation from their sites. And as part of that, several have announced changes meant to cut back on state-run media, too. But we report that despite those restrictions, some outlets like RT, formerly Russia Today, have found ways to pick up traffic elsewhere on the internet. Our reporter Emily Glazer will tell us all about it after these headlines. A California federal judge said Apple can keep the video game Fortnite out of its app store for now. But she said Apple still has to allow Epic Games to access Apple's software development tools. The decision sets the stage for a trial in May, which could have major consequences for the App Store. As a reminder here, Epic has been locked in a legal battle with Apple, as well as with Google, since the summer over so-called developer fees. Epic says the company's 30% commission on transactions in their app stores is too high and that it's anti-competitive, while the app store operators say they need the fees to provide services like security and maintaining user privacy. And they say the fees are on par with what other app marketplaces charge. And Twitter announced several changes on Friday that would make it harder for posts to go viral ahead of the U.S. election, including changes to how users retweet messages. Now, if users try to retweet something, they'll be prompted to add their own comment to what they're sharing. Here's our tech reporter, Georgia Wells.
It's designed to encourage people to consider why they're amplifying something and also to kind of add their own thoughts. And so I think the rationale here is by slowing it down, this will catch more of the content that people are attempting to spread maliciously and that the good stuff will still filter through.
Twitter is also tweaking its algorithm so that tweets that other people liked won't appear in your feed. The changes will roll out for everyone by October 20th, but some users might already be seeing them. And they'll last at least through the week of the election in November. By the way, it's not your imagination. Several social media companies have been rolling out new policies to prepare for the election. Here's Georgia again.
I think this is the last chance that many of these social media companies have to get any changes in before just the election is too close. They need to have time to test these measures to make sure that they don't cause more harm than good. And also, introducing things immediately before an election could be seen as like meddling. So I think this is likely the last big change we're going to see from Twitter and their main effort at combating bad information on their platform ahead of the election.
All right, next up, we'll talk about another front in the battle against misinformation online. That's after the break.
News, laws, and regulations are changing by the day. We get it. It's hard to stay on top of it all. That's why ADP is here to guide you with up-to-the-minute compliance expertise to help you navigate these complex times so you can pay your people accurately and on time, regardless of changes in legislation. When you rely on us for payroll and HR, you're trusting us to help you take care of your people. It's what we've been doing for over 70 years, and that's not about to change. ADP, HR talent, time, benefits, and payroll, informed by data and designed for people.
We've been reporting on the different steps that social media companies have been taking to weed out misinformation and propaganda on their platforms ahead of the U.S. election. But a Wall Street Journal investigation has found that some state-run outlets have been able to pick up traffic by placing content on more mainstream media outlets' websites, sidestepping social media companies altogether. Here to talk more about this is our reporter, Emily Glazer. Emily, thank you so much for joining me.
Thanks for having me.
Okay, so broad strokes, I wonder if you could just remind us what kinds of efforts we've seen across the biggest platforms to weed out misinformation on their sites and what exactly they've been focusing on.
Yes, the biggest tech platforms have been doing a lot of updates to their policies to try to weed out misinformation ahead of the election, to the point where they literally are updating the policies sometimes each week, because there are always different loopholes, whether it's purposeful or not, that folks are realizing they can spread information that might be misleading or false. Recently, we have seen the platforms, especially this summer, Facebook and Twitter both announced new policies to limit the spread of state-run media. So that could be publications like RT, Russia Today, Sputnik, as well as publications coming from other countries. But given that Russia did try to interfere in the 2016 presidential election, there's always extra attention on those publications in particular.
And so how exactly have they been going about doing that?
Sure. So in August, Twitter was the most recent big tech platform to announce that it would be monitoring and labeling state-run media. There were kind of a select group of countries that they were starting with, including Russia, and that they would be labeling them state-run media. So you would, you know, the average person would know, since a lot of folks might not know what RT is, and that it is, you know, Kremlin-backed. And Twitter also did more to limit how much reach they could have on their platform. So really limiting, you know, any ability to try to pump up the audience or viewership. So they kind of clamped out on it on that way. Facebook, you know, just several weeks earlier than that, this summer, also started labeling state-run media on its platforms. So for instance, you know, again, RT was in that early group. They said they're continually looking at which publications to monitor and label, and that you can appeal the decision. But RT and, you know, some Russian-backed publications were in that initial group because the platforms basically feel that their users should know that a publisher is state-run. It's not something that the average audience is familiar with, and they feel like it's important that if a country is trying to spread propaganda, the users of their platform should know where it's coming from and know that there might be more reasoning behind it.
Okay, so you mentioned an outlet called Russia Today, or RT, in there. That's a publication that's been really successful at getting eyes on its content despite these companies' restrictions. This publication has a bit of a history in the U.S. Can you just remind us who they are and what they do?
It does. This is not the first time that RT has been in the news. Basically, RT is state-backed. It's Russian-backed publication. There's a variety of content, but generally, from talking to a lot of researchers and experts, the meat of the content is to try to sow discord and tension and anger. And so when it comes to the U.S., you know, we saw stories like, you know, red paint thrown on Trump Tower, and especially around the racial justice protests. There were articles around that. But that's also mixed in with very clickbait type articles around celebrity gossip and famous athletes and, you know, who's with whom and so forth. So they do a really good job masking with some of this clickbait celebrity news, with some stuff that might not seem a really big deal on the outset, but you can see beneath it that it is intended to sow that discord, confusion, or anger.
And Emily, you've been looking into RT for a while now. How have they managed to continue to pick up traffic despite restrictions on social media sites? What'd you find out?
We found a little known traffic exchange that basically served as a middleman to get stories from RT and at least one other Russian-backed outlet, Sputnik, onto the homepages or article pages of a number of conservative-run U.S. news sites. Basically, there were boxes that would say things like from our partners that were actually ads, but would have RT stories in them that were not labeled as RT. So the average person on, say, Real Clear Politics or The Daily Caller or The Blaze and even AccuWeather. So some mainstream sites, too, that are not, you know, conservative, suddenly their audience might be scrolling down their homepages or article pages and click on a link and would be taken to this middleman, Mixi.media, and then would be taken to RT. This was all basically a traffic play. The websites could then, you know, charge advertisers more based on the traffic that they're getting. But the big benefit for RT is that they are finding another way to use traditional media in this sense, not social media, which is continuously limiting them, to get in U.S. eyeballs, basically.
So it sounds like a big piece of this puzzle has to do with the industry of content recommendation, which is bigger than just RT. How does this business work, and how does it enable more of this kind of content to spread?
Content recommendation has gotten bigger over the years. There are some large companies, one called Taboola, another called Outbrain. At one point, they were actually supposed to merge. That's since been called off. But basically, for the average reader, if you're going through a news website especially, you might just see little boxes now and then that might look like sponsored content, or it might seem like it's part of the website, but you don't really know. In this case, with Mixi.media, it said from our partners. We would also see things like around the web. And it really isn't clear where this content is coming from. Basically, these traffic exchange networks will have these little boxes or widgets on home pages or article pages. And when readers click on the articles, you'll either get taken directly to that website, or in the case of Mixi.media, it would serve as a landing page. So you'd go to Mixi.media's website, and then you can further click on the article and go to the homepage of a place like RT or the publisher partners. It's very common these days for a lot of publishers to do this in order to generate more traffic. And it especially became important after Facebook in 2018 changed its algorithm that made it focus more on content from family and friends and less from news publishers. So they're always trying to find ways to fill that hole and, you know, drive the traffic that they were missing. And one thing that's important to note is that they are not paying to be in the Mixi.media publisher network, and Mixi.media is not paying them to be in it. The value here is the traffic on both ends. And then both of these places, whether it's Mixi.media as the new traffic exchange or the publishers, will sell ads against the traffic that they're getting.
And, you know, notably, publishers don't have editorial control over what gets placed on their sites.
That's a really important point, Amanda. Thank you for bringing that up. We reached out to a number, you know, maybe close to 24 publishers that were in the Mixi.media network of sorts to find out, like, did you know RT is part of this publisher group? And do you know, in some cases, that RT stories are on your website? Some of the publishers we spoke with said they knew and they didn't mind. Some said they had no idea. Some said they knew, but they considered it the cost of, you know, getting the traffic. And so it was really interesting to chat with these publishers to understand more about their reasoning. I even reached out to Zero Hedge, which has become a more, you know, right-leaning publisher over the years. Initially, it was more financial news-based. And they said they don't keep track because they have so many widgets. They don't know what's on them. And, you know, this is just what it is right now. So it was really interesting to see the variety and diversity of responses back. I will say that after we made those calls, this is going back to late July, in the days and weeks after that, five publishers ended up removing the Mixi.media widget from their website. You know, I just want to add too that Alex Barron, the founder of Mixi.media, who my colleague Keech interviewed for this story, did say that he told all the publishers about RT. So unclear exactly what went through those various conversations with publishers, but I just want to make that point.
Got it. So Emily, I think when we talk about content moderation and elections, I think we're often focusing those conversations around social media and what those companies are doing with their platforms. But this seems to illustrate that the challenge of misinformation and propaganda spreading online is a much broader issue than that.
Indeed. Obviously, social media matters a lot. There's so many people on social media. It's a really easy, fast way to spread content cheaply as well. Sometimes it's organic, sometimes it's paid. But we're seeing those platforms, you know, Facebook especially, Twitter, Google, you know, which operates YouTube, really crack down in the last year or so, especially. And what we're hearing from experts, and even frankly from, you know, the head of cyber at DHS, who said this recently, is that traditional media is now becoming a place where bad actors, whether domestic or foreign, are trying to influence what people are seeing. And it's almost like going back in time, because now that social media outlets are tamping down and putting more restrictions, various players that want to influence the political conversation are finding other channels to get there. And frankly, traditional media is where they are going in some of these cases.
All right, our reporter Emily Glazer, thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you.
That's it for today's tech news briefing. We've got more tech stories on our website, wsj.com. And if you like our show, please do rate and review us in your app store. It really does help. I'm Amanda Llewellyn for The Wall Street Journal. Thanks for listening.